free speech in this country, but often not around the question of Palestine. And so people who speak up, particularly people who are Palestinian, who speak up for Palestinian rights, end up sort of being silenced in all manner of ways. And so he felt very strongly that sort of the next chapter of his life would be around the issue of Palestine. And he was starting out and embarking on that when he became very sick. But it is beautiful to see it's beautiful to see the work that they're doing at Palestine Legal, and also to see the work that CCR is doing in so many young lawyers who are pushing forward a radical theory of lawyering and also movement building.
I want to thank you all so much for being with us. Lizzie Rettner, niece of the late Michael Rettner, senior editor at The Nation magazine. Vince Warren, Center for Constitutional Rights executive director, and Bahar Azmi, legal director at CCR. The new book, Moving the Bar, My Life as a Radical Lawyer. I'm Amy Goodman.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
Camera activist Betty Lee has captured 30 years of street protests in Portland, from the 1989 demonstration condemning the racist murder of Mullah Gaita Sirah to the Black Lives Matter protests of 2020. The Old Mole Variety Hour is pleased to offer a large print of your choice of Betty's most iconic photos to 10 lucky donors during KBOO's fall membership drive. Winners will be selected by lottery, and everyone who donates will be eligible. For more details and to see Betty's photos, go to kboo.fm/BETTELEE. Every Monday morning at 9 a.m., the Old Mole Variety Hour gnaws at the roots of our capitalist system with views, reviews, and interviews that you can sink your teeth into. Music by Lion Rhythms.
Listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. I am Tammy, and with me is a lovely, jubilant, magnificent, sometimes a little cheeky Althea. How are you?
Those are words to get you out of bed in the morning. That's what I that's how I feel. Thank you so much. So excited to be here with you this morning.
Yeah, it's another great one. Another Portland morning filled with folks who maybe should consider going to driving school.
Sure.
The rain has fallen and is no longer fallen, but it will continue on to fall.
Yeah. It was weird things happening in the sky where it's like half rain cloud, half blue sky kind of on the horizon, and it's like not decided what it's going to do today. I personally, I don't know if we've talked about this on the show, am not emotionally ready for fall. I thought I had a few more sunny days left, but boy, if the weather hasn't gotten so much more unpredictable in the Pacific Northwest.
Have you noticed the tree change, the colors changing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
I do love the changing colors of the trees.
You can see autumn is coming, and with it being fall, KBOO's fall drive is actually still undergoing, and if you like what you hear, if you want to support programs like this and any other ones of your favorite public affairs or music programming show, show your love, show your support. You can go to kboo.fm/give and make a contribution that way. You can also text 44321 to KBOO, you can text KBOO to 44321. It's high tech stuff.
Yeah.
You can text in your donation.
I wanted to say that's a great transition you did there, too.
You're welcome.
I was like, oh my gosh.
Professional. And
Fall drive. Yeah, we'd love to have your support. And now is a great time if you're thinking about becoming a member, want to renew your membership. We would love to have you be a part of the living, breathing organism that is KBOO Community Radio.
Yes, even just upping your donation by $1 makes a huge difference.
Huge difference, yeah.
Yes, and we appreciate all the people who have been supporting the station over the years, and most recently here in our fall drive, and there's definitely going to be more opportunity to donate. So like we said before, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321.
Nailed it.
Thank you. Thank you. And onwards with our program. As devotees of the show know, we like to do two parts to the program. The first part in which we either have a fantastic interview or just do somewhat of a news roundup.
Mm-hmm.
And we are doing a roundup today. And then part two, we ask a question that is sometimes related to current events and sometimes just more of a community question that we want to ask the listeners. And then we open up the phone lines for part two. But as we were saying, part one, news roundup, we actually have a couple of kind of like follow-ups mm-hmm. from last week, since a lot of stuff was happening and a lot of local stories were kind of waiting for you know, people in charge to make a decision. And they have. Are they making good decisions? That's up for you, the community, to choose. It doesn't seem, though, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, if your measure is do people like what they did, if that's what you're thinking, make something an unpopular decision, if that's how we're measuring it these days, then maybe. Maybe it's possible. Yeah, so last week we talked about the Portland City Council vote to extend or re-up on their contract with Clean and Safe for another 5 years, costing $25 million. And we, you know, discussed some of the issues with Clean and Safe. It's been around for 10 years. The city audit that was done last May was pretty scathing about how little oversight the city has over these, I mean, rent-a-cops that are employed essentially by the Portland Business Association, or Alliance, excuse me, Portland Business Alliance, which is the lobbying group. And that alone is worth rectifying, but also that there's been 10 years of, you know, complaints of, you know, security officers who don't, like, identify their agency harassing houseless people in downtown. So
without much, you know, kind of like, with no repercussion or transparency mm-hmm. to the complaints of what was happening, which is big.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of, you know, it's a complex issue, and there's a lot of folks who've been spending a lot of time pushing against it. And even, you know, kind of like the meeting in the middle idea about it was like, hey, extend it for a year, but let's actually rewrite this contract. Let's actually, you know, hash some of this stuff out so that it isn't, you know, presenting the same problems that it always has been. But unfortunately, it was a 4-1 vote to re-up it. So it did go through. Joanne Hardesty was the sole vote against. And I know in Hardesty's remarks, she even said, you know, like the parts of Clean and Safe that do graffiti removal and trash pickup, like those things are actually very much valued by, you know, mm-hmm. downtown business owners who have this interest in keeping that area especially clean, especially attractive to tourists. But that the security aspect and the amount that of their, you know, taxes, dues that they have to pay that go right into the pockets of the executives of the Portland Business Alliance is maybe more troublesome. So
yes, and we do have a short audio piece of audio that has all of our commissioners kind of talking about this with Joanne Hardesty, pretty much pointing out some of the stuff that you mentioned. So here it is. We'll be right back after this.
On Wednesday, Portland City Council voted to renew its security and sanitation contract with downtown Portland Clean and Safe for 5 more years at about $25 million.
If we want to recover, frankly, we have to address this basic service gap that Portland faces right now. And Clean and Safe is one strategy for doing that.
Commissioner Mingus Mapps was one of City Council's 3 yes votes. He hopes it brings downtown one step closer to economic recovery.
But the reason now isn't because of COVID. People are avoiding Portland at this point because it is perceived to be a dirty city and a dangerous city. That's why it is incredibly important that we support programs like Clean and Safe.
The only commissioner to vote no on the 5-year contract was Joanne Hardesty. She proposed a 1-year contract.
There's this false image that somehow if we just pick up garbage and remove graffiti, then downtown is going to look like it did 3 years ago.
Hardesty says her main concern with Clean and Safe isn't the cleanup part, but rather that it's part of an enhanced service district. Those are areas that use both public and private funding to maintain. She's worried about lack of oversight regarding ESDs and believes the city needs a policy standardizing the services they can provide. She also questions their priorities.
We're going to clean up downtown, but I don't know if you've noticed, there's not a corner of the city of Portland that doesn't have garbage. So clearly garbage cleanup is a symptom of a bigger problem. And a bigger problem is our neglect of people on the economic edge.
I don't think that we have to do all or nothing. And I tell you, it's unacceptable to me to do nothing.
But with that, Maps says he recognizes the importance of debating enhanced service districts and how future city policies could and should shape them.
We've built some flexibility into this contract so that when the council decides what the future of enhanced service districts look like, we can come back and revise that contract.
I'm going to hold my colleagues to their word. They want to do better. I'm going to hold them to that. I hope they do.
Thank you, Joanne Hardesty. That was Joanne Hardesty, Mingus Maps, and a reporter from KGW giving us the business following the vote from, was it Wednesday's meeting, to indeed go on and do a 5-year contract with Clean and Safe and spend about $25 million doing so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I like the part of, like, and they're like, do you think this is garbage is the problem? This isn't the problem. And it's true. That's it's a great Band-Aid, but that's not the actual problem. And if you think only downtown has garbage,
yeah.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I got to tell you. But it doesn't. Yeah, it's like it's a symptom of an actual more. I'd say the only thing that comes to mind is like rotten and difficult, like very unwell sections of the city that just, like, you know, like Joanne Hardesty said, just neglected humans. Mm-hmm. And this is the side effect from it. It's not garbage is not the problem.
Yeah. And I don't know, I think it also, like, you could make a variety of cases of what's Portland's real problem.
Right.
And I think some of it comes back to the city government structure, you know.
Oh,
and
there she is. Althea, you always mention this. No, I love it. Keep going.
My age-old diatribe about how weird our city government is and how, you know, because the services and responsibilities of the city are split between 5 people as opposed to being one instrument that, you know, you have a city council that does legislative stuff and you have a mayor who does administrative stuff and who, like, carries out whatever the city council passes. You have, you know, 5 people who all have a different chunk of responsibilities who have to intercommunicate with each other because these bureaus have to work together. It's very odd. It lends Portland some unique problems. So in the sense that we like to be special, it's great for that.
This is true. And it's the only city of its size in the States to still use this method, the system of commissioners.
Yeah, I believe Ooh. That charter review is coming up soon. So that would be, that's like the city, the founding document, the document that creates the city, essentially. Making changes to that is happening soon. A lot of the commissioners that got voted in last year, Mingus Maps particularly comes to mind, like support charter review, essentially support changing the city government structure because it is very weird and definitely dysfunctional. And I believe the Coalition of Communities of Color is, like, conducting a survey about that right now.
Ooh, interesting. That'll be a fun interview to have.
Yeah, we should look into that. And I can link that on our in our show notes on KBOO.FM if folks are trying to find out more about that. But yeah.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. I think we could really, and I know KBOO has done a really good job in, like, kind of looking at the history of why this has been the way that it has been. It hasn't changed. I never thought of, like, oh, but what can it be? You know, it's like, this is why it sucks and this is what we've done. But what can it be? Just a mayor? Just a city council? Just like every other American city?
Not to say that every other city government is, like, so great and working so well.
This is true.
But they have a different set of flaws that, I mean, I think you can make a pretty compelling case that they're, like, a more manageable set of flaws than what we're dealing with.
Well, here, we're not like other cities here. We're special.
We're really different, and we're really special.
And speaking of special places, for our second part of our news roundup, we never talked about it on the show, which is the Texas abortion law bill and all of the caveats around it. And there is a march this weekend that's happening, starting at Rev Hall. And I figured we can, you know, kind of give a little bit of details about that. But just kind of cover what exactly happened in Texas and how the heck did anyone think that it would be legal? That's a lot. That's an ongoing question. Why the heck did you think this was legal?
Mm-hmm.
But yes, as we've heard, I think a lot of people are probably aware, but if you haven't, Texas has taken away the right to have an abortion after 6 weeks with no exception for trigger warning, rape or incest. And this law was designed in a way to kind of circumvent all of the legalities of, you know, this being illegal,
mm-hmm.
And pretty much deputizing citizens and taking the law into their own hands with, some people are calling it a bounty, I thought that was interesting, mm-hmm. With an initiative of $10,000 if they do win the lawsuit against either the person having an abortion, an abortion provider, or even the driver that takes you over to the mm-hmm. location where you are going to have this done. And I just want to mention that the person that's suing doesn't even have to have a connection to the person or show that they were injured in any way from this personal decision that someone is making.
Yeah.
So it's like really, really gross. But this is a way for the state to absolve themselves of being sued.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone does get sued sooner than later, because mind-blowing, you know, they can just say this is not constitutional. Most be like, okay. But it is the process that is a hurdle. Mm-hmm. And it didn't happen by accident, you know?
Yeah, very true. I know there's another aspect of it that's like, you know, if you're the person trying to, you know, report somebody for this, the law says that, you know, even if you're wrong, you don't pay your own legal fees. You know, the burden of funding an entire lawsuit falls upon the person seeking an abortion, providing an abortion, driving someone to an abortion provider. Even if the person who took you to court was wrong and you didn't do those things, it still comes out of your pocket, which is, you know, very much designed to keep the state out of it, because it's, you know, the laws that we have in place right now and the precedent in the Supreme Court controls what the government can do. So it can't be the government going to sue people who go and trying to prosecute people who get an abortion. Like, that is something that would immediately, I mean, this has already been challenged, but is like much more evident and onerous and like that would immediately get challenged. But this is like a little bit trickier, but also like, I don't know this off the top of my head if it's like a criminal or civil complaint, but how can you possibly like allow a lawsuit where there's no injury to somebody? If you didn't lose anything, like, I don't know. And if your claim is like moral injury, like, yeah. How can, if it's a civil case, you have to put a price tag on that. And if it's not a criminal offense, then you can't send somebody to jail. I don't know. It's very weird. And when we were, I mean, it's upsetting.
It's right? Very upsetting. And the people that get hurt from this the most are the people who always get hurt from this the most. It's mm-hmm. like working class, people who don't have means, you know, mm-hmm. like, and women that it's, we've been here before. Like, we know what happens when this service isn't given
mm-hmm.
legally, safely, above board.
Yeah.
We've seen how many people have died in our history trying to perform this type of surgery on themselves. And in the research of this, I saw that in Texas there were like abortion teas. I'm not sure what they're made out of, but like sales for that went up. And it's we've been here. Like, we have been here.
Mm-hmm.
It does not work to DIY this. And there we have services that they don't just provide this. It's a lot of like things around it. It's also like, you know, if you need to talk to someone, if you have any questions, you mm-hmm. know, which, you know, this is something that's serious that's happening to your body. And to just like take it upon yourself and to do it alone, like it's like a secret, you know, or like it's something to be shamed of. If you do have those type of feelings around it, you know, that's you with yourself. This is not something that an outside, you know, in my opinion, an outside person needs to like make you feel this way.
Yeah.
But even with all that said, it's like, at the end of the day, this is a human, like, you putting a human life in jeopardy. And mm-hmm. like, this is the if your sensibilities are being damaged because someone decides to do something to themselves. And also, you don't know what the circumstances are. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it just, like, really, it's like, go find a hobby. Go find something to do. Like, this isn't, in my opinion, it's not okay, you know? And this is something that is again, whether it's not or, you know, whatever your opinion is around it, it is something that's, like, constitutionally protected.
Yeah. So in this current yes. moment,
that and people fought really hard and drank a lot of abortion tea, and a lot of people died for yeah. this to be codified the way that it is. So now to, I don't know, just deputize people.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of, and when we were prepping, you know, talking about this, you mentioned that, like, it seems like there's a lot of, like, conservatives suddenly embracing, like, a snitch on your neighbor kind of vibe, which, I mean, I guess you could say that there's, like, times in the past where, you know, a more conservative thought process would lead you to, I don't know, Red Scare your neighbor, mm-hmm. who is, like, into art. They're probably a communist. But if you, you know, if you take the right to privacy seriously, then what? People got too much time on their hands. I don't know. It stresses me out.
It's
because
stressful.
How could you trust anybody, you know? And they also allow people who don't live in Texas to report people.
Oh, and this is what was pretty... This is where we didn't do a TikTok watch on this.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you know. I know that you know.
Yeah.
For listeners out there, the users on the app TikTok found a way to convey to other users how they may or may not possibly... be able to crash the site for mm-hmm. What's like a nice way of saying ratting on someone for tattletale. What's I can't because this makes no.
You know what's funny about that is that it's almost like universally like, hey, don't snitch on people that yeah. we don't have a good word for it.
Texas
informing the
informing.
Authorities.
There you go. Yes. So Texas did have a website in order for people to inform the authorities when or to. Place in a complaint for when someone is having an abortion, and the people on TikTok found a way to make the website crash mm-hmm. So that folks aren't doing this to one another.
Yeah.
And they did it, and it was very interesting. I'm not condoning or you know, or disapproving or approving of anything, but how much do the people need to say this isn't what we're about, and how much can a small sector of folks, like, it's a silent majority. That's the only thing that comes to mind, or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I have two thoughts. One, what you were saying before about it being, you know, just because you try to make it illegal with new creative means doesn't mean that it doesn't happen. I think that maybe it's time to take stock of things that have been treated with a sense of shame, whether that comes from a religious place or not. And with abortion specifically, it was, you know, added into religious fervor in the 70s and 80s. Like, it was not part of, you know, religious doctrine before that. But just thinking about, you know, what you might consider like societal ills and like mm-hmm. all the things that you're not supposed to talk about, whether that's like sex and sexuality, like bodies, you know, addiction, stuff like that. Nothing gets better by not talking about
right.
it.
Yeah.
And I think that this falls into that as well. And just like having an umbrella, it's like maybe there is something out there that it's better to not talk about, but like our baseline shouldn't be it's uncomfortable. And I don't know any, you know, nobody I know is in favor of this thing. Mm-hmm. So let's not talk about it. And I assume that everybody is like crazy that's doing it. It's like, hey, maybe let's talk. Let's have a little conversation. The other, you know, speaking of viral videos, there was this viral, I mean, I saw it on TikTok. I think it was other places too. It was a young woman asking questions, I think of her brother off screen. And she was saying like, do you support abortion? And he was like, no. She's like, do you support it if they're too poor to raise it, you know, if they can't afford to care for a child in the way that a child needs to be cared for? And he says, no, I don't support it. It's still murder. And she says, you know, do you support it if, you know, it's endangering the life of the mother? And he says, no. And then, and like quick responses, you know, and then she asks, what if you were married and you got someone else pregnant? Silence.
Silence.
Very, very telling silence. I can link that in our show notes as well because it was like
me started on that. Yeah. I believe it. I believe it. It's anecdotal, but I believe that.
And if I can say one last thing.
Please do.
Because we can move on after this. excuse me. Just that, you know, even folks who are pro-choice don't, like, love abortion, I guess. I won't speak for everybody. But it's not like, you know, that there's these characterizations when you're looking across an issue at somebody. And that if they believe, and we've talked about this on the show before, like, if they hold this one kernel of truth to be true, if they hold this one kernel to be true, then that must mean that they're into that whole bucket of popcorn. This is a weird metaphor, but, and that it makes them seem monstrous by comparison, and just like trying to like pick that apart and like, is that really what's going on here, you know? And just because something is like unpleasant doesn't mean that it should be illegal, I guess, is my point. Thoughts on that?
this is a very, you know, this has a lot of different sides to it, you know, like the quote unquote moral argument, and like, how do you talk to someone who thinks that what you're doing is just completely face value, like evil and, you know, immoral?
Yeah.
And I there's, you know, there's room to talk about it. Although specifically for this, this is like, we've talked about it. You know what I mean? Yeah. And we've made our decision. Do we want to revisit this? Revisiting is always good. You know, revisiting things is nice. But we saw it pretty instantly what is, you know, first of all, like the Department of Justice is not, you know, they're already wanting to sue. But then we're already seeing, what I'm looking here, it says an uptick in Oklahoma abortions and bid to doom DOJ suit. So And also, this isn't something that's like, oh, let's talk about this bridge. So we still have this bridge here. This is something that's human
really,
life.
Really
this
impacting people.
Incredibly. And also impacting people that, again, don't have the means to go and have, like, go to a private doctor and do this. Or, you know, like, relying on these public institutions or on these, like, public... Yeah, institutions, like Planned Parenthood or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Other
broader service providers.
Broader service providers. And it's not, as working class people, you know, as poor folks, as like people of color, a lot of our autonomy is decided for us, you know, and that's, I think, it's not fair. And if there's at least, if people have fought for legislation to try to like correct that, why reverse that in any way? And also, like, the idea that you're incentivizing with money just gives a very straight... It's strange. It's weird. It's scary because we see what people... People need money, and we see that people will do things, like, really messed up things for money because of the, you know, the society that we're living in. And
well, it's interesting that you, like, point that out because it, like, codifies an existing power structure. That it is the folks that will be the target of, you know, the people who are like, I heard you got an abortion. Wah. Like, you know who those people are. And you're going to squeeze, you know, like some poor person out of 10K because the government says you can, because you think you have moral high ground over this person. Like,
if we're going to pull on this sweater, we are all going to be embarrassed at the end of the day, you know? So let us not. But there is some action happening this weekend. There's going to be a march at Rev Hall. Othea, do you have a little bit more info on that?
It's a women's march with the, women's with an X, I guess. Sorry, I don't know how to pronounce that. And I know that there's some debate over that term. But yes, it is going to, be, as you said, at Rev Hall. It's supported by a bunch of, community groups, and there should be some cool speakers, so I can link some info on our
is there a time for that?
Oh yeah, 11 a.m. sorry,
11 a.m.
Nice. 11 a.m. at Revolution Hall.
And that's Friday or sorry, Saturday.
Yeah, that's tomorrow the second.
Nice, interesting. We'll have all of that info and more on the show notes at kboo.fm/thegap. And we are going to take a very short musical break, and we'll be back in just a couple of moments. Stay tuned.
If you want me to stay, I'll be around today to be available for you to see.
smile. Calvin, please, I'm gone. Forget reaching me by phone, because I promise I'll be gone for a while. When you see me again, I hope that you have been the kind of person that you really are now. We got to get in straight. How could I ever be late when you're my woman taking up my time?
That was Sly and the Family Stone with If You Want Me to Stay here on KBOO Portland. You are listening to The Gap. And just a reminder, we are in the midst of our fall drive. And if you are interested in becoming part of this volunteer-powered experiment in radio, then please go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Every dollar that you donate helps keeps the lights on, donates, supports programs like this, the Wi-Fi, I mean, all of it. and also, this is a place where a lot of people come in, get their training, and learn how to, and become empowered by learning how to broadcast news and views that they are interested in. And again, KBOO's charter mission is to uplift underrepresented voices, and that's what we try to do here every single day. So if you want to be part of this, please go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321 and show your support. Make a donation if you can. Thank you.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, helping, you know, volunteers find their voice on the radio, that's cool or whatever, but you're telling me I could support your internet connection? Get out of here. That's great.
Everyone needs internet connection.
Sure, they surely do.
Especially these days, yes.
Yeah, right. Okay, so we are into our second half of the program here, and this is where we ask for our community to call in and comment, and we're going to be talking about school. Right, part of our news roundup, we're talking about updates from last week, and the Newburgh School District voted to formally adopt their ban on Black Lives Matter and Pride flags, and we talked about that last week.
They're going to have issues. They're going to have issues. People in Newburgh are going to get paid
for the
lawsuits.
And the superintendent has already said that he can't enforce it, like his lawyers have advised against it, and you know, I'm sure there's going to be an injunction against it being enforced because, as we've discussed previously, it's pretty plainly unconstitutional. But we don't want to get in the weeds on that too much right now. But, you know, in having conversations with the community last week about Newburgh schools and, like, what should or shouldn't be in schools, I wanted to have a conversation about, like, what is school for? Because I think, you know, kind of conflicting arguments about it come from very different, you know, a school of thought that you may not even know that you're a part of, if you like, pardon the pun, school of thought. But I think it would be interesting to dissect that. So if folks are interested in calling us, please do. We're talking about what is school for? What was your school experience like? What did you learn? What did you not learn? And what should be taught to our kids? And why do we think we should teach that? So if you have thoughts on that, please give us a call, 503-231-8187.
Yes, and this definitely, you know, we got a lot of feedback last week, and also from the feedback that the school board got during their meeting, it seems like a lot of people have different opinions about what schools should be teaching, what they are for. Again, it's a public, you know, it's for the public, but our money goes into it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I don't think that all of us know exactly what is this public institution supposed to be giving to us. Some people say it should only be focusing on things like arithmetic and hard sciences. Some people say this is a place where people learn how to socialize, so they need to be aware of all the things that are social and are in our society, the good, the bad, the ugly, with of course some very thick and rigid lines in between. So yes, we would love to hear what our community thinks, that kind of like the jobs of schools are, and also people who maybe aren't in school now and don't have any people that do attend schools, What did you learn in school? What do you wish that you would have learned? Do you think that your public school education prepared you for the real world? And if not, what do you wish that it would have taught you? And again, the phone number is 503-231-8187.
Yeah, I would really love to hear what folks think about that. You know, one school of thought is that, you know, in order to have a functioning democracy, you need to have people who can read the thing on the ballot. And so that was definitely part of the push to get folks educated and to have that be, you know, government funded through public schools, because there was a period of time in this country and in many countries where, you know, education was something that was very far away from anybody who didn't have the means. And that's not to say that our public school system is a pure meritocracy, because I think you'd be pretty hard pressed to make that case, but that it does offer, you know, a little more than the three R's, ideally reading, writing, arithmetic. But so that, you know, if we're going to try to have a democracy, we need to have people be able to participate in that democracy is kind of one thing. And I mean, to that end, for folks who have said, you know, about this Newburgh school ban, which has said that, you know, like any political stuff, they're not going to show it, or they don't want to, like, they don't want that to be in school at all. I think that that is kind of like counterintuitive, you know, to have political stuff be banned when, you know, existence is political. And when you graduate high school 17, 18, the next year you can vote. So
we do have some callers on the line. The first caller is Camillo. How are you, Camillo?
Hi, good morning. I wanted to say something that I didn't get to air last week because of a problem with you hearing me. And what we were discussing was that I thought that we should hear some of the negative points of view so we could have an intelligent discussion. And your comments to that were that it really wasn't possible to have an intelligent conversation because there was just no intelligent response. And I think now that we're going to see lawsuits, that we'll have this opportunity. And in effect, I think it's a good thing that they decided to ban it, because there will be a definitive discussion in the court.
Oh, well, thank you, Camillo. Really appreciate your feedback. And thank you for calling in again like you did last week. Really appreciate it. Do you have anything as far as what is school's function and job in our society, or how what you personally wish you would have learned more of in school or actually got you prepared to something?
I think that question is going to have to be addressed in the lawsuits. And, you know, they will respond by saying that this interferes with the appropriate role of what goes on in school, and certainly to have an opportunity to express your opinion about contemporary affairs that have historical bases as a part of one's education. And, you know, we go to school in order to learn about the background of historic and contemporary issues, and to, you know, learn the facts, the truth, and the understanding, interpretation of the events and how it applies to us. That's the experience one should be getting in school, and it's being denied them.
Oh, I appreciate that. I like that, learning the backdrop and the background of contemporary events. Well, thank you very much, Camilla. We're going to get some other folks up on the online. And again, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, and if folks are interested in joining the conversation about, you know, what's the point of school anyway, and how should it be handled, please do give us a call, 503-231-8187. We would love to hear from you and get this kind of conversation going. Yeah, and thinking about what are the kind of base parts of knowledge that we all need to have. I know that what I reflect on, I mean, kids always talk about, like, oh, I never learned to balance a checkbook, or I never, and I mean, there are some, like, financial things that it would be pretty sweet if we knew about, like, hey, what's a 401k? What's an IRA?
You just gave me a stress migraine.
Sorry, don't freak
know.
Out.
I'll never know one day. We do have
don't freak out.
We do have another caller on the line. Linda, are you with us?
Yeah.
How's
Hi,
it
Linda.
Going?
Hi. I just wanted to thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to make a comment. I was up in Seattle with my great at my great niece's house, and she's a senior in high school, goes to a Catholic school in Seattle, and they sent home, the mother showed me, they sent home like a spreadsheet, and it had different topics. Like the first topic, the only one I really paid attention to was abortion. And it had like a spreadsheet. This would be a far right view of abortion. This would be a moderate right view. This would be kind of a middle view. This would be a moderate left view. This would be an extreme left view. And then they asked the student, what is your view? Where does your view fall in this? And then they wanted them to ask one of their parents where their view falls, which one they would pick. And the mother is pretty conservative, and she kind of questioned, what is this class? Should this be taught? What's going on? So, you know, it's kind of sensitive, but it seemed like they were doing it in a, you know, a bipartisan, no judgment kind of way. So, you know, what they do with it in the class, I don't know. But I thought that was very interesting. And the class was American Government.
Interesting.
That and is, that's what government does. It, you know, it considers all this and makes laws about this and lawsuits. And
mm-hmm.
So I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I remember my government class. We did some current event stuff as well. That was around the time that both weed and gay marriage was getting legalized in the state of Washington. So a very exciting time to start paying attention to the government. But yeah, that's very interesting. And I think that, you know, that could kind of be, I don't know that it's a counterpoint necessarily to like the Newberg situation, but explaining like the scope of views that one person could have on a particular topic and, you know, kind of like what plays into those particular things, I think is a very interesting thing to equip students with, you know, and to be able to recognize, hey, this is how my mom feels, and it's, you know, based on these kind of set of factors, but I can see from my experience that I have a different interest in it.
Yeah, and it was pretty non-biased. It was, these are the views, where did you fall?
Yeah, very interesting. Well, thank you so much,
and
Linda.
And I thought abortion was a pretty, you know, a pretty good one to put it right at the top.
Yeah, totally. Well, we appreciate you calling, Linda. Yeah, you have a great rest of your day.
It's interesting. So, well, people are, I feel like a lot of parents become concerned about stuff. And again, we're living in a society where you have to work, and to be a caretaker isn't even, you know, in some cases considered real work, unfortunately.
Hmm.
And I think that sometimes, because of all these factors, maybe parents get to a situation maybe like a little too late, you know, and that's interesting where you involve the parent in almost like the curriculum, like, you know, if it's a grid sheet, I'm imagining mm-hmm. it's like step by step, like, you know, abortion, I'm guessing, starts with an A, so it's the first one, but mm-hmm. just to kind of gauge and see, and also see, I don't know about if this is like a good thing or a bad thing, or good and bad, you know, it doesn't even really come in this equation, but I wonder what impact there is, if at all, when a person sees, oh, my parent is on this side, but I'm on this side, and then like mm-hmm. if that causes any kind of like what that causes, because you know, I know as a kid, like when I was a kid, I, you know, you do what your parents say, and you know yeah. you mimic what your parents say, and to go against that was kind of like when you were a child, really really young, it's like going against God. In high school, maybe a little bit less so, you
mm-hmm.
know, but. That's an interesting, well, it's not necessarily like answering the question of like what you wish schools would have taught you or what is the function of schools in our society. It's an interesting way of going about things. Just because, like, just being like full transparency. I don't understand why like the political stuff has to be part of it, but it is a government class, so maybe that's mm-hmm. like part of the thing. But that's an interesting thing. Interesting for you, Seattle public private schools.
Very interesting. If anybody else wants to chime in, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call at 503-231-8187. We're talking about, you know, schools handling political topics, what kind of things should be covered in school, what was your public school young schooling experience like, and what did you learn, what did you wish that you had learned. We would love to hear folks' thoughts. That's 503-231-8187.
You know, you mentioned balancing a checkbook. I was in the not very good math class, and I went to the math class where they did teach you these type of things.
That's nice. Yeah, we didn't have... I mean, I've talked to my mom about this, where I was like, Mom, where did you learn to, like, bake this one thing that I really love? And she's like, oh, I learned it in my home economics class. Home economics was not required of everybody when I was in high school. I do remember that one of my history classes in middle school was taught in the room with all the ovens in it. Pretty tempting when you're like 11 years old. But yeah, that's something that has fallen off a little bit, because I think that there's, you know, some of that was informed by gendered expectations of, you know, do women need to know calculus? Maybe they should learn how to iron.
I remember home ec. I remember it. It's the only reason I know how to make crepes. But we do have another caller on the line. Are you with us?
Oh, yeah. Hi.
Hello.
I have some thoughts that I wanted to share, because you were talking about the practical education, and that is something that, you know, I always hear from parents that we don't have enough of. And at the same time, we have a lot of huge social problems that we need to be addressing, you know, at a local level, everywhere. And one example that jumped out at me recently was Bill de Blasio did a photo op where he trashed 100 dirt bikes, he just compacted them, and I guess they were illegal. I don't remember the story for why they were doing that, but here's a lot of vehicles that could be refurbished by a school, teach a bunch of kids how to a practical skill, but something that also has a lot of math and science connected to it, that they could learn other things about it, and then distribute that to people that need them, so then they're also learning the political realities of the class of people that that are in need of transportation, that need to get to work. It's a sort of connection to people that I never had when I regret not having in school any kind of connection to the larger community that was around me at the time, and I think that's the kind of creative thinking that teachers are kind of barred from because of this whole teaching to the test. Mm. I think that's intentional. I think that teachers are beaten down and cynical. That you either a bright person that can shine through all that darkness, but not everybody gets that. Not everybody is there, and so a lot of teachers by the end, I mean, there's a lot of terrible teachers out there because they're in this terrible system. So I don't know. I'm running late for work. I just wanted to throw that in there. Love your show, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you. Love hearing that. Creative problem solving, teaching to the test. That's, because we aren't teachers, so we don't know these type of big nuances. There's a reason for all of these stuff.
Yeah, and I think, if I reflect on my, when I was in public school, what was the most meaningful stuff to me, it was, more, creative interaction or stuff like that. In elementary school, we had a whole thing where we, created a medieval town, and everybody was, some people were shopkeepers and some people were, in charge. It was, really, really interesting, and just, that... teachers who have a freedom to engage with kids in a variety of ways and to teach them, not something that's so dry that you have to sit straight at your desk and, do the times tables in under a minute.
Right.
I think that, there's a lot that you can teach a kid without, sticking straight to the test. And I'm not a, a personal fan of Common Core. It was getting instituted after my time, but I do not reflect kindly on it, just because, you know, there's like so much variety in what is relevant to teach.
Yes, this is true, and we do have one more caller. How are you, caller? Are you there with us?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
This is Uncle Carl, and I was reflecting on what Carmelo and Linda said, and I was just, you know, just kind of looking at myself and wondered how I, you know, how I make my choices, and they're, and the way I do it is I ask myself. I don't look to the media or other people or whatever. It's always myself. And I, you know, I was reflecting on how did that come to be? And I think it's, you know, it's something my parents gave me and my grandparents that are people that I was around. So it was kind of like, you know, it was something they learned for different reasons in their lives. And, but I think that, you know, it's like a gift that I received. And you know, if you don't grow up with that, if you grow up thinking that it matters what all these other people are doing or what the news is saying or whatever, then, you know, that's how it goes for you. So, I don't know. I think we just have to kind of try to understand the experiences that other people have and how they're shaped by those things. So anyway,
I think that's worth. Yeah, I think that's well put. And that, you know, anybody who, you know, you see speaking about a particular issue, who's talking about a particular issue, they have their own, you know, set of experiences that brought them to that point. I think that that's well said, point well taken, and thank you so much for calling.
Yeah. And I guess the thing, you know, the thing that I would add is, you know, for me, as I try to discern what this life is about, it, and the ultimate answer I come back with is, you know, the pinnacle of what it is love. And that's, everything else is just whatever. Doesn't really matter.
Yeah, supplementary. So. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, you have a great rest of your day. We have another caller, Douglas. Can you hear us?
Hi.
How's it going?
Well good. I have a point to make here. I was a teacher, and when I was going to high school.
Yes.
Hello?
Yeah, continue, Douglas. Sorry about that.
Okay. Well, when I was going to high school, I was taught nothing about the Vietnam War, and then I was told to go to the Vietnam War.
Wow.
And I think that, you know, there's a lot of problems with that.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not taught what's happening in the world, then you have a hard time making decisions on what you're going to do with your life.
Yeah, that's a very good point, and a very, you know, poignant one that had, you know, immediate impact, not something so abstract.
So I was taught to be cannon fodder for a bunch of politicians that wanted to control a country, and I didn't have any idea that was even happening.
This is true. I thank you so much for bringing this up, because this is when the first caller said teaching the background of contemporary issues, and when you don't do that, then that's exactly you're a result of what happens, and that's unbelievable. I think it's negligence, really, to not teach about that and then send you off to war. So
well, you wonder how many 18-year-olds are sent off to do things that they know nothing about is happening when they were in high school, and all of a sudden they're out of high school, they have to make a choice on what they're going to do with their life, and they go out and do something for the government that is against how they believe.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have the time to explore what your beliefs are to begin with. Yeah,
right.
You do some damage for your future self too.
Right. Well, okay, well, thank you. I like your show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for taking my
call. Thanks, Douglas. And we have another caller on the line right now. Can you hear us?
Yes.
Thank you for calling.
Hello, thank you.
Yeah. What are your thoughts here?
Nothing real political. Just went to Portland Public Schools. And I don't know. I'm 49, so the sizes of the classes, you get 30 students in there, and it just seems like the style of teaching may not connect to all students. I wasn't the greatest student. I was kind of hyper, and, I would get lost if the teacher just sat up there and read a book. I just would lose interest. There's different, but you put a documentary on or a movie, and that's how I learned a little easier. So just not knocking teachers, because I know there are some really good ones out there, but if the teachers could pay attention a little more, and you got a big class, you might be losing some of those students, just in the style that you're teaching, or you may not, that's all. And I don't know, it's been so long, obviously, since I've been in school, if the classes are smaller, because then you get thrown into this whole category of you have learning disabilities and stuff, and then there's a stigma with that. Creates insecurity, yeah. I feel. So I just, a little bit, just that's all I wanted to say. That, works both ways, though. Like I said, I wasn't the greatest student. But some teachers connected a lot better than others. And I felt like sometimes you just get lost in that class, because that teacher would be speaking to 12 people that are getting the way that they're teaching. And then there was, so that's all I really kind of call and say.
Yeah, well, we really appreciate that. I think that is a really good point, and I know that is something that many teachers out there are still pushing for, because there's been so much change in the past year, and even beforehand, that small class sizes make a difference for them too, because teachers want the kids to get it. They don't actually relish in giving everybody a failing grade, because it's themselves that got the failing grade if nobody took on what they were trying to teach, and that small class sizes give you, the kind of one-on-one attention that a lot of kids really need.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you for letting me call.
Yeah, of course. You have a great rest of your day.
Thank you so much. These are really great points. And I think, while no one necessarily answered the question in the way that we framed it, I am seeing a couple of, repeating through lines of preparing students for contemporary issues and learning the background of how, the history of how we got to where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
I guess support for teachers, because that is, again, I didn't think of that. You have your core curriculum, and there's a test. And like you said, if students get a failing grade, I'm sure there are teachers who see that as a failing grade on themselves as well, and their teaching styles. And large classrooms, people are gonna fall behind, because not everyone studies the same. The more students you are, the more you need, the more one-on-one time that teachers need in order to even get to know who their students are.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there's a lot of good food for thought here, and kind of like, a common through line of, I wish I would have gotten a little bit more context from my school, about stuff that was going on in the world, but also that, your home life and your family is still going to play a huge part in your values and how you interpret the information that you get in school. And so I think that, it's not necessarily like that parents can fully like abdicate their responsibility in that regard.
Indeed. And we do have one last caller. Jim, can you hear us? Oh. Jim, you there? Let's see. Oh, I guess not, and that's okay.
Sorry about that, Jim. We are running up on it, though. I just want to thank everybody for listening, everyone who participated in our conversation today. Really, really appreciate that. This has been The Gap. You can find us online at KBOO.FM. And please support our fall fund drive. It keeps great programs like this on the air and everything else that you hear on KBOO at all hours. Consider supporting us, KBOO.FM/give, or you can text KBOO to 44321 and come be a part of our community in this community radio station.
Indeed. You put the community in community radio. Your support means the world to us, and we are absolutely out of time. We'll be back next week with more musings and noticings of today's happenings. Talk to you next week.
Bye.
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM.
At its core, democracy itself means rule by the people. KBOO exists to give a voice to all of the people in our community, not the business with the most dollars to spend. If you feel like sharing your love of democracy and your love of KBOO, get the limited edition KBOO Sounds of Democracy t-shirt, designed by our fantastic graphic designer, Michelle Mouse. You can order yours right now at KBOO.FM.
Tune in to KBOO every Friday at 6 p.m. from September 15th to October 15th for KBOO's Hispanic Heritage Month series. Join KBOO in celebrating and paying tribute to the contributions and enriching influences of Hispanic